Let's get going. So welcome everyone to our latest session, which is all about communication, branding and content. So big shout out to the team at Downtown in Business and Abby and co for pulling this together. Kind of over the last say 10 weeks or so, obviously the rise for the need for digital solutions is absolutely huge. And when we talk about content branding and communication, it's no more time that's pertinent than now to think about those three things. So I'm pleased to say we are joined by some unbelievably knowledgeable people who can guide us through kind of this crucial parts of day-to-day business. And it's all about asking the experts. So I want to hear from you rather than me rattle on. So if you do have any questions, put them in the chat feature or the Q&A feature below. I have got some questions prepared, as you can imagine, but we want to hear from you and answer your questions. So I think what we'll do first is just do a quick round the room, or round the Zoom, there we go, of who we are. So if we start with Kim, just introduce yourself and your business and your expertise.
Thanks, Ollie. So yeah, I'm Kim Leary. I run a design agency called Squibble. We specialize in branding and web design. We've been going since 2010. So as a kind of entrepreneur and a business owner, I started pretty much in the middle of the recession. So learned a lot then, and I think a lot of the stuff I learned then I've had to kind of reapply now. So yeah, we're kind of we're looking forward to answering as many questions as possible.
Amazing. Thank you. Amrit, over to you, mate.
Hi guys, my name is Amrit. I am a creative director at a company called Rebel Creatives, which is a content creation agency and a training provider. We kind of specialize in short form and live video content, as well as campaign and social media strategy. But the biggest side, which has really taken off recently, is the training side. We've been delivering a hell of a lot of training since lockdown and running two very popular boot camps in Media City and in London, as well as the online side as well. I'm also an artist, and examples of my art here. Running art, and I sell my art online, but kind of the content creation side is quite a big part of what I do. I've been live stream for 5 years now, and my background is actually in graphic design, advertising and branding, working in the industry for about 15 years. Yeah, it's been cool.
Amazing. Abby?
Yeah, hi everyone. I'm Abby. I'm head of social at a company called Electric House. So Electric House are a social media publishing group, so we don't only create the content, we also distribute it throughout our communities. Our communities include On the Tools and On a Budget, which are predominantly UK audiences, On the Tools being 80%, over 80% male, and On a Budget being over 80% female, so a good range. So yeah, I've been in this role now for around about 3 years, and I've been with the company for four, so yeah, it's just a bit of background about me.
Amazing. And just wow the audience with how many followers you have combined?
I think it's almost at 7 million, I think, over both of the communities now. So yeah, we're doing pretty well.
I mean, this is where I should have gone first and introduced myself, because mine's quite embarrassing in relation to that. Yeah. So for those who don't know, I'm Ollie. I'm CEO of Updates Media. Similar to Abby, we're a social first publishing house. So we are an agency. So we basically embed teams into people's offices to run their social media, create all their content. But we also own and operate Birmingham Updates, which has, in comparison, a measly 620,000 followers. All Brum is, and all kind of hold on to every word. So we use that experience from growing Birmingham Updates to then help brands with their social media, basically. So enough of me rabbiting on. Question number one. So with lockdown easing and businesses beginning to reopen, do you have any top tips for how brands should be communicating with their customers at this time? So Kim, if we start with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I've been kind of asked this question quite a few times now, and I think ultimately what it comes down to is I think you can't go in all kind of guns blazing and hey, buy from me, sell. I don't think it will work, but being able to relate to people is usually the best way to open up a conversation. everything always starts with conversations, doesn't it? And I think that's the best way to instigate anything. A lot of people, what they've been doing during this time, and I myself have done it as well, have kind of gone back to basics and just had a look at everything that we've got in terms of branding, and making sure that everything is still consistent. I think things kind of get a little bit lost. So using the time to really make sure that everything that you've got, from your email signatures through to the messaging on your website, this has been perfect time to kind of make sure that it's still in keeping and still what people want. And I think branding for me is all about consistency. So making sure that that message is then consistently delivered to customers, to kind of past and present. Generally just trying to open up conversation and being there for people. People's needs are changing. And I think that businesses that can't adapt their messaging to kind of fit with how we're working now will probably be the ones that will struggle. So it largely depends on target audiences, but I think having finger on the button, knowing what your customers are doing, and make sure you're kind of reacting to what they're saying and the kind of space that they're in will definitely stand everybody in good places.
Amazing. Abby, Amri, anything to add?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think obviously the main thing, like you say, is just making sure that, you know, you're up to date and you're answering questions, making sure that, you know, if anybody has got any questions, if your customers have got any questions, that you're being quick to respond to them. I think something else as well that we've kind of very quickly had to learn, especially through this phase, is the fact that testing is not to be scared to test, I suppose. So especially on social, so just testing all different post formats. So trial communicating through your audience with, say, live video, with just normal video content, still image content, stories, and just see, I suppose, how your audience responds best to different post styles. That's something that we've been kind of doing quite a lot of, especially from a communication point of view, and more so communicating with our audience to and from. So yeah, that's something that I'd definitely recommend.
Amazing.
I'd just like to add one thing to that. I think the biggest thing that I would recommend is be honest about your situation and remember that customers do understand what you're going through, because a lot of them are going through the exact same thing or know a business that is also going through the same thing. If you're honest, you will create advocates. And that's one thing that you need to do as a brand is relate and get people to kind of relate to what you are and what you want to produce or sell eventually. But create advocates, share what you're doing, share the behind the scenes, show your customers how you're getting back on your feet. And they really do appreciate it. I've done that many, many times. And you'll be surprised, with honesty comes people who want to go that extra mile and support you because they understand what you're going through.
I completely agree. And I think in terms of that, authenticity of message and content is so important, and social media gives you that access that you've never had before to a company. So I remember John Lewis back in the day had a whole TV series taken in behind the scenes, but now with social, everyone can do that with a touch of a button. So it can be a little bit scary, it can be a little bit daunting, but opening up, being very authentic, I think is a really kind of strong, powerful way of engaging your audiences. Cool. So Kim, this one's probably mainly for you. How do you maintain your kind of brand message through your digital channels? And do you have any good examples of companies doing this really well?
Yes, it's a really good question. I think that it all hinges on consistency. Consistency is the key, and also having a really good idea of why you do it. And this is a question that we tend to start most projects with, and generally clients tend to struggle. Apple do it really well. Apple have got their why down to a T. They are, as a company, they're always the ones that are kind of quoted, and there's lots of companies that will try and mimic them. Dell will try and get into the same space of selling iPods or kind of MP3 players, but they didn't quite make it. And that's because Apple kind of unite a movement of people. People buy into the products and what the company stands for. And although Apple stands in a tech space, actually what it's known for is pushing boundaries and changing the way that we listen to music. you know, before the iPod, you'd have to sit in a room in your kind of bedroom or in your house. You couldn't take music out on the go. You could take a CD player, but really they were a bit naff. And if you jumped up and down, it didn't work. And I think that's what people buy into with Apple products, is really it's the notion of change. And I think Apple were very clear from the very beginning of what their why is. Why do they get out of bed? Why do they do this? Why are they kind of in this space? But it's a really hard question to answer. There's lots of different aspects to it. There's why on a personal level, there's why on a business level. But there's some staggering figures and kind of quotes as to how much more successful companies are that really do define their why. And I think that's the kind of messaging that then when you can transfer it into social media channels, it works really well, because people can actually buy into it, as opposed to here's a product, here's its features. Actually, people don't care about that, because sometimes the MacBook spec is very different to a Dell or a HP. HP or Dell probably better, they might have better processing, but people buy into the concepts and the movement that kind of comes with Apple. And so I think that's where kind of companies that have really got a good grasp on why they're doing it tend to perform better.
Absolutely. And I think just during this kind of pandemic, we've had that opportunity to kind of stop and reflect and rethink of our why. Just an example from the other day with the Black Lives Matter march and everything that's going on in that space, Gymshark have been unbelievable. If you take a look at Gymshark's social media over the last couple of weeks, the stuff they've been doing is so living true to their brand, and they're not afraid to say it. And there was another great example of West Bromwich Albion put up a post. We actually retweeted our Birmingham updates because it was amazing. And a guy responded basically saying, "Why are you putting this rubbish up? I'm going to cancel my season ticket." And West Brom simply replied saying, "Good, you won't be missed." And it was just amazing. Just being really true to your brand is so, so important. And with social, you can kind of live that. And I know, Abby, at Electric House, you've been testing different formats and almost being the voice for the trade community with On The Tools recently.
Yeah. So the main example of that is we've recently set up a new live series called Talking Trade. So we noticed, obviously, the construction industry have been quite hard hit with the pandemic and not necessarily being kept in the loop as much as they should have been, really, with whether they're allowed to work, what the rules are, especially kind of at the start of everything as well. There was a lot of grey area with what they could and couldn't do. So we set up the live show basically so that the audience could not only share their opinions with us, they could come on the live and talk to us as well and share how they're feeling about certain things. But the main thing we noticed off the back of that was the comments and the engagement. Like, the engagement we were getting was paragraphs and paragraphs of people like sharing their side and, you know, what they're doing and advice for the people in the trade. So yeah, it was hugely successful for us, and it was great for our audience as well, which is obviously the main purpose.
Amazing. Love it. So Amrit, we've seen kind of social media changing rapidly over this time. There's been some quite incredible innovations come out of that team. How do companies kind of keep up to date with the latest changes? What tactics have you got? What tactics can they use?
Well, I mean, that's quite a tough one to do, keep up to date with social media. You have to constantly be reading up and being evident and reinventing yourself. I mean, there's no really one way of, and I wouldn't actually recommend anyone keeping up to date with social media, because you'll go crazy. In fact, what I would recommend is, if you have a niche and you have a particular area that you want to focus on, then do read up on that. But don't wait for updates to create content. At the end of the day, is you want to create content because you're passionate about it. So there's definitely a big focus on engaging and quality content over numbers. I mean, with Instagram removing likes or experimenting with likes. So that's a really interesting one and a big change. Another example is a huge popularity in short form video content on platforms like TikTok and also Byte. So during the lockdown, many people, from individuals who never thought that they would even be on a platform like TikTok, have been creating regular videos because they're bored, completely bored, which has been really interesting to see. Now, with all the brands that we work with, TikTok has been a number one focus. I'm part of TikTok's influencer agency, so I get to work with them behind the scenes on very cool projects, like with Saatchi Gallery and Stranger Things season 2 when it came out as well, and World Cup cricket. But it's interesting because they have a massive focus on content creation. Their kind of legacy is everyone can be a content creator. You don't have to have the professional lighting. And I think that's a really good message to kind of spread, is just get started. You know, there's so many different updates that are happening. There's new platforms that are coming and going every single day. What you don't want to do is put all your eggs in one basket and try and make it one platform work, but focus on the content that you're producing, share it multiple ways, reimagine it on different platforms, and then see how it goes from there.
Love it. Love it. Abby, Kim, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, TikTok in general, I just love TikTok at the minute. I think it's like one of the best platforms. I think obviously the way that they've kind of broke into that short form market, I suppose, when Facebook are trying to move towards like these long form content. I think it's, you know, it's so smart, and the way that they're constantly, you know, introducing like all these trends and new hashtags and stuff like that for people to jump on, I think it's wicked. So the one thing I'd say is, if anybody watching this isn't on TikTok, definitely give it a go. Don't be scared to approach TikTok as a brand. It's brilliant. And kind of going from keeping up to date with social media and stuff, I completely agree, you will go mad, like, if you try and keep up to date with social media, like, there's just so much to know, and it's changing all of the time. But if you are really, really keen on doing that, there's a lot of groups on Facebook in particular, like social media management groups that share, like, upcoming updates in really kind of, like, easy-to-consume formats. So go and have a look, search for some groups. The main one that I'm in is called Social Media Geek Out, which I really, really do recommend. They're hugely beneficial. So yeah, I'd get yourself in those to start with. But yeah, that'd probably be my main advice.
Amazing. So I guess we're quite fortunate that we create content for end consumers. Kim, any kind of thoughts in terms of that B2B market, and how do you create content for a business?
Yeah, so I think I'm probably going to slightly disagree, and I'd say don't go on everything, because it's time consuming, and because if anyone's going to put anything out, I think it's got to be right. We largely as a company kind of dabble a little bit in Instagram. It's a brilliant platform, and there's a lot of design agencies that use it. Personally, I know I use LinkedIn a lot, because LinkedIn for me is really good for having conversations, sharing kind of knowledge and research, which is what I really enjoy doing. And I used to use Twitter a lot, but I find Twitter really negative. so I think I've kind of spent my time just refining what I do on all. Facebook we used to use, but to be honest, our Facebook page doesn't, it's not something that I use quite so much anymore. But LinkedIn for me is definitely the one where I get kind of the most interaction, the most conversation. And from kind of a B2B point of view, I think that it's normally the most suitable. But it depends on what you're looking for and what you're selling. If it's B2C, then yeah, I mean, TikTok and Instagram have got a perfect kind of placement for it. And Facebook with being able to sell products as well. But from my personal point of view, haven't got enough time in the day to kind of manage everything. So I kind of try to focus on one platform that I enjoy using and kind of generates the most conversations for me, I think.
Yeah, and interestingly, LinkedIn just announced, well, they slightly let some information go about what they look for in their algorithm. So they actually look for dwell time, which I thought was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. So they basically want you to press the see more button. If you press the see more button, that's like a tick in the LinkedIn algorithm box. So again, it's all about sharing ideas, and that slightly longer form, more in-depth content on LinkedIn is working really well. And that's now what the algorithm's kind of looking for. So, I mean, we've had to transition Birmingham updates massively since they wanted 3 minute plus videos, this more episodic style content. And the amount of time and effort required to make content of that length that's engaging, that keeps people's attention, it is tricky. And I think TikTok just kind of cut that in half and said, don't worry about that. Just do what you like. And anyone can go viral. It's fascinating. So we've had a message in from Steph. So her comment is, a lot of us manage social media channels alongside a full-time job. How do you recommend managing this? How often should you post? How much time should be dedicated? So, who wants to take that one?
I don't mind taking this one. This might not probably be the best answer for this. However, what I would say in terms of how often you should post, there's no black and white answer for that. It's definitely a trial and error thing that you're going to need to go through. To be honest, there's no harm maybe starting off with like maybe one post a day, or maybe it might even be one post a week if you really haven't got the time to do it. But if you can test different amount of posting, then you might see more of an increase in followers, say, or more of an increase in your engagement. It's all a trial and error thing. And kind of in terms of recommendations for managing this, I would look into potentially software such as Sprout Social. You can kind of, within that software, publish multiple posts within one go on an overall content calendar, which might help save you a little bit of time when it comes to publishing cross-platform. But with that, I would also bear in mind the fact that different content obviously works better on different platforms. So try and make sure you're still optimizing for all of those different areas as well. But yeah, just say trial and error more than anything. Just test it out and keep an eye on your insights.
Yeah, I think what Kim said as well about just focusing on the channels that are important to you. So Steph, I imagine it's going to be kind of LinkedIn from a sales perspective. I imagine you'll keep your kind of Instagram for more personal, but it's trying not to be everything for everyone. Just really focus in on what works for you. And as soon as you stop worrying about having to post on every single channel, it actually becomes a little bit easier because the stress kind of reduces. You don't panic as much. You don't feel like it's going to take too much time. Unfortunately, there aren't any quick wins. As Abby said, it is all kind of test, measure, learn, but definitely try and focus in on the platforms that are working for you. Amrit?
So I think great answer there as well. I would definitely agree with that. I'm always about quality over quantity. It's a question I get asked quite a lot, is how often to post. And I always say, like, when you feel like posting. So there's two ways here. We don't manage people's social media. We do the campaign work on social media. So we can run a very big campaign, do all the social media strategies and stuff. But then the one thing we don't recommend at all is using like Hootsuite or Buffer and share the same post four or five ways. You're going to lose followers if you do that. And it is an option that marketers will share with you and recommend. And I just say, ignore it. Just do not do it at all, because it's a very lazy way of sharing the same content. And if you're sharing the same content five ways or four ways, whichever way, your customers or your audience will be like, why should I follow you on this platform when you're sharing the exact same content on another platform? And if you are sharing a platform with 20 hashtags meant to be for Instagram on Twitter, let's say, then it's not going to work. The algorithm will lock you out. So definitely share, focus on quality over quantity. And one of my biggest recommendations is look at the stats and the analytics on platforms. There's a lot of analytics on Twitter, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, that tell you kind of when your audience is most active, and also which posts are kind of best suited to different mediums as well, images, posts, videos, and so on and so forth. So definitely do have a look at your own analytics. You'll be quite surprised at what you read.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I just live by the motto, if you haven't got anything good to say, don't say anything. Social media has changed, definitely in the last 2 to 3 years. I think we got into the habit of just starting your Monday morning, scheduling a load of tweets to go out throughout the week, and it's like, right, that's done, I'm off. Whereas now, because social is that authentic platform, it wants you to be more real, more human. Like when people just sporadically post graphics, it doesn't give personality or that kind of human touch. So for me, it's really only post when you've got something good to say, and when there's something genuinely of interest to your audience. Just try not to force it. I think it's the really key thing. So, and we've kind of answered it, but Manny's asked, would you recommend scheduling posts in advance? So I guess the obvious answer is yes, if you haven't got time, but preferably not. But that's my point of view. So open it up to the panel.
Well, again, kind of just bouncing off, sorry, the previous one very quickly is there's nothing wrong with scheduling posts if it's for a specific event or a campaign or something, a product that you want to launch. There's nothing wrong with that. What I don't recommend is scheduling the same post on different platforms at the same time. So there's a difference between that and scheduling for an intention or for a reason. Make sure there's a reason behind scheduling, and then that's fine.
Kim?
No, I agree. That's exactly the same sentiment.
Abby?
The only thing I'd add, I suppose, is, I completely agree. No trouble with scheduling. I just wouldn't go too far ahead. There's been instances in the past, which I've kind of heard of, where obviously people work quite far in advance. And the thing with social media is you need to be kind of really on the ball, I suppose, with what's happening as well in the outside world and with updates on the platforms themselves. TikTok being a great example with that. So like the trends and how quickly they move on TikTok. You don't want to be too far ahead with your strategy. I know you can't schedule on TikTok, so probably not the best example. But you need to be up to date with it, I suppose. So if you are going to schedule, just make sure you don't get too far ahead of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, like we're quite lucky with running Birmingham updates because we just don't schedule as a rule, because if a major incident happens in Birmingham and we've got this lovey-dovey post going out, it just looks completely inappropriate. So from our perspective, we just like to be reactive and a bit more live. So Abby, talk to us about groups. So I'm a huge advocate of groups, and I know Electric Houses as well. So how can businesses use groups for their advantage?
Yeah, I think the main beauty with groups, and it's something that, again, we're a huge advocate of as well, I suppose, is the fact that they allow you to really, really communicate with a niche audience. And groups, in my opinion, work a lot better when you really, really target your niche and give people a reason as to why they should join. I suppose the main difference between groups and pages in terms of getting people to actually convert and join and follow is the fact that it's a case of just clicking a button a lot of the time with obviously following a Facebook page and being served that content. However, with a group, a lot of groups now have questions set up that you need to answer. You need to fit certain criteria to be able to join. It's kind of a very thorough process. So making it clear from the get-go when people find your group why it would be beneficial for them and why they would want to join it. So for example, and this is probably going to make me sound really sad now, but for personal, I'm in a lot of like dog groups on Facebook, but it's because I personally enjoy seeing that content. So you're going to want to find your niche and target it to that niche and give people a reason to be in that group.
Amazing. Kim, anything to add?
Yeah, I think groups are really good for kind of positioning yourself as the expert. And any good company wants to be seen as the expert. It strengthens the brand, it strengthens the view of how companies do business. So for me, I think that's kind of quite critical, and that would be the key. One thing I have to say is that managing groups is a huge amount of work. it doesn't come easy. It's a lot of management. There's a lot of continually pushing out really good content, starting conversations. Hats off, because it's a lot of work.
How many is on a budget got now? About 4 million or something?
I think it's just in the 4 million mark now. So our DIY group is just about to hit 1.9, I think. So yeah, there's a lot of posts going in there on a daily basis, as you can probably imagine.
Amazing. And I'm kind of a big advocate at updates for brands accessing groups that already exist. Have you got the groups that we own, I just don't let them in because why would I? But I'm horrible at that. Is there any kind of advice for businesses who do want to join conversations within groups of a good way of doing it, which isn't just an advert, basically?
Yeah, so this is something that we actually encourage quite a lot among clients that we work with, and we advise them through this kind of process in terms of how they should be communicating, how to like search for certain topics within the group that they potentially want to jump in on and have a conversation with. So even though it might sound quite straightforward, obviously the main thing you want to be doing as a brand is figuring out the keywords that you're going to want to be finding within these groups and filtering down the posts to the people who might be interested, and not necessarily looking at the post itself, but also looking at the engagement. So other people asking questions in the comment about a certain paint, for example, that you could potentially jump in on and say, oh yeah, like, you know, this is our brand and this is our product, you can find it here. Or just joining in on conversation that people are having about certain topics as well as a brand can be quite beneficial. So yeah, that's something that we do encourage alongside the brands that we work with in particular, to kind of really get involved within those conversations, but much more on a human level as well. So it doesn't always necessarily feel like it's coming from a brand is very, very important.
Yeah, makes sense. So Paul's asked, and this is the killer question, I guess. Obviously, different platforms are there for different types of content and different audiences. How do you go about finding where your audiences actually live? Do they live on LinkedIn? Are they on Instagram? Are they on TikTok? Is there any tips for people listening in about how they actually find their customers and where they exist on social?
Yeah, I can take that. So one of the things that we do when we start a campaign is we first kind of look at the audience of the product or the intended audience for the product or event. Secondly, we do a lot of experimentation as well. A lot of businesses tend to be scared of different platforms because they've never used it before. So we tend to kind of create a profile without their business name, without their business image, and just ask them just to go crazy and see what happens. And we find they overcome this overwhelming fear very quickly when, for instance, we always get our clients to jump on TikTok without their business name and handle and all, and say, post whatever you want, find out how the hashtags work, find out how the trends work, and just get a feel of it. And you'll be surprised on how many people from sectors really enjoy platforms that you wouldn't expect them to enjoy because they've understood it or they've had to play around with it. Like lawyers, there's a law firm that we're working with who is doing some fantastic videos on TikTok now, by also being fun. I mean, you can't be serious on TikTok at all. So if you are coming from a serious industry and thinking you're gonna be sharing really boring stuff, no one's gonna like it. So definitely, but we have to realize that each platform has a bit of a sense of fun or serious, and you have to change your emotions based on that. So yeah, don't think that LinkedIn is just for professionals or boring people, because we're all on it and we're not boring, obviously. But there's platforms out there where you can actually make pretty much, I would say, any industry tailored to, once you understand how it works.
Amazing. I just need to go and check out this profile on TikTok. Lawyers on TikTok sounds genius. Kim, anything to add there?
I mean, I think for me, it's all about conversation and who have I spoken to when I'm kind of out meeting people and networking, you know, downtown in business events. Where do people generally connect with me afterwards? Most of the time for me, it's LinkedIn. I'm quite precious over social media profiles as well. So my Facebook profile is a personal profile for me. I don't necessarily do too much connecting in a business sense on that platform. Twitter I use for kind of knowledge and sharing. But generally, it's kind of, for me, B2B is always LinkedIn, and for most of our clients as well, unless it's e-commerce, and then it's very dependent on what they're selling.
Yeah, makes sense. Anything to add, Abby?
Yeah, I think the main thing that I would say is, I agree with the guys. But also as well, like, if you are wanting to test out new platforms, don't necessarily be scared to do so as well. So if Instagram, for example, is one that you're a little bit scared to get on, maybe have a look at how other brands are approaching Instagram. Look at other content examples and see if there is a way that you can potentially take your brand messaging and put that into a similar creative. It won't always work for everybody, but if you are wanting to do that, then don't be scared to give it a go, is all I'd say. You can't necessarily go wrong in that sense with social media.
Amazing. A brilliant question here, and I'm intrigued in the answer, actually. So you are the specialist. From Manny, in terms of videos on LinkedIn, what are your thoughts? And what do you reckon in terms of recommended time? And would you encourage the use of subtitles? Who wants to take that one?
I'll take that. So videos, again, is a huge benefit for every platform. Every platform is going towards video elements. If you look at the stats for most platforms, the engagement that you will get is the highest on videos than any other ones at the moment, because every platform is encouraging video content, and then eventually also interactive video content as well. So my biggest kind of advice is definitely try creating videos. It is hard work though. It's like, it's easier to create a text platform, and an image. When you wanna create a video, it's not just a simple of, I'm gonna take a picture and put it up. There actually has to be thought into it. What you don't wanna do is kind of do what I've seen on LinkedIn, where people just create a slideshow based of images and turn it into a video and put it on LinkedIn, which is really bad and boring because they're trying to create videos, but they don't know how to create videos. So I think the first question you should ask yourself is, teach yourself how to create good quality videos, short form videos, which platform, which apps you can use. You can use apps like InShot on your phone, which is a fantastic app to edit videos very seamlessly together and put it out on social media very quickly. So first question is, how can I produce quality video content which your audience will enjoy? And if you can't, then don't until you do, until you can.
I love that. I completely agree. It's lots of funny angles and kind of being able to see people's noses as they film themselves. just a couple of points to add to that on LinkedIn. What I've found is if you upload the original video file to LinkedIn, it will gain more engagement than if you upload a YouTube link. So try and keep all the videos native to the platform. And then a lot of posts at the moment, I don't know if you've seen, people are posting that the link is in the comments. So for podcasts and all that kind of stuff, it's always link in the comments. The science behind that has been tested, and the engagement is 3.5 times bigger than if you just place the link in the post. I think lots of people are confused by it, but genuinely it massively increases the amount of eyes on the post. That'd be useful.
What a tip. That's
there you go.
Let's get all your secrets out now. Abby?
I think the only thing that I would add to that is just kind of on the subtitles section of that question, 100%, I'd always recommend using subtitles, especially on longer form content. I think one thing that we always keep in mind is the fact that people are listening without sound. I feel like if you make content for sound off and then make it even better when people watch it with sound on, then you can't really lose. As long as your subtitles, you know, aren't an eyesore or anything like that, nobody minds subtitles being on screen, so they're always a great asset to have. And I think another thing with LinkedIn as well, which is something that, you know, we've really been trying to kind of like push through with the daily vlogs that we're doing at the minute on the Electric House channels, is this kind of like human element. And LinkedIn is a very professional platform. However, it is very much moving more into this kind of human side, where you're not always necessarily having to show this best side of yourself. You can have a little bit of a laugh and a bit of a joke and stuff like that. And that's absolutely fine to do. And that's something that we're trying to put through on our vlogs at the minute and really show like what we're like as a company, like and as human beings, I suppose, and our personalities coming through on that content, which is something that I'd recommend people doing, because we have seen success with doing that. So
yeah, I mean, if anyone hasn't seen the Daily Bolt on Electric House, it is genius, and I do tune in every day. And it's absolutely right. It gives you that insight into the companies in terms of their brand, their culture. And I'm fortunate, I know Lee really well, Electric House, and the way that business has grown, and you kind of feel it and you love it just through watching their content. And I know you're lucky that you have Jamie, creating the content on a daily basis, and you're fortunate to have that. But personally, at updates, because we haven't got the biggest team, we just do something on a weekly basis. So everyone knows that on Thursday, the update's released, and we just do kind of a 3-4 minute bit on latest news on social, funny campaigns we've seen, and best kind of use. So it's definitely thinking more regular, it's more episodic. And if anyone has seen the update, I've almost exhausted every backdrop in my flat. So I need lockdown to finish so I can get some different backdrops going on my on the videos. But interestingly, we don't subtitle, but it's something I think we should be looking into. I'm going to come on to live streams in just a second, Amrit, because I know you are the master at live streams. But we've had a question in, well, a couple really. First, probably for Kim, which is, how do you build your personal brand and profile on socials? We've talked a lot about companies, but how do you now do it from a personal perspective?
Good question. And I think that really the answer has to, yeah, it's that horrible word of be authentic, which means so many different things. But if you kind of break it down, it's be yourself. It's have conversations that you're happy to have, and don't try and pretend to be somebody else. Don't try and put a filter on or try and show pictures of items that you think people will be interested in. Share what you're interested in. Talk about, and particularly from a, I suppose there's two aspects to it, but from a business profile point of view, talk about the things that impact you. In terms of, you know, how the current situation has impacted you. Talk about what you've been doing outside of work, we've spent a lot of time kind of developing resources that people can use. So we've done things on brand audits, so how people can go through a kind of a brand audit. We've done things on defining your why and all these types of useful documents and resources will come from me. It's part of my profile. I enjoy kind of helping people, sharing knowledge, and again it's that same aspect of kind of putting yourself forward as the expert, it can be a difficult thing to do, but you need to earn people's trust, and particularly in a digital world at the moment where we can't just go and meet people, we are tending to kind of see what people are doing more through social media and less through through face-to-face. So I think by sharing as much knowledge and information that you can, it's bound to help other people. And if it doesn't, find out why, ask questions. Why didn't you like it? Why did you not use it? Or kind of flip it around and say, what did you enjoy from it? I think talking about different speaking events, speaking spots, and yeah, generally just sharing what you do, because people do find it interesting. As long as it's not taking photographs of your breakfast and your lunch, then we're getting into the world of oversharing. But I think, yeah, there's kind of being consistent in what you're delivering will help build your online profile from a personal point of view.
Love it. Anything to add?
Yeah, I can say, I mean, like the most, first off, to build a personal profile, I think you need to look at your consistency. So first of all, look at your name and your handle. Make sure your handle is consistent on every platform you're on, which is really, really important. Don't add, like, don't be 4506 million and then ABC on another platform. It's gonna be very hard for people to follow you, and when you kind of grow, it's gonna be, you don't want that to happen. So look at that, look at your kind of profile picture, have a similar profile picture across your channels. So people, we're, as visual creatures, we recognize images. So we also recognize if you've got a profile picture, which is same on LinkedIn and Twitter and Instagram, you actually might get the same followers or people following you because they recognize you instead of looking at your name. So look at that, look at your bio, which is really important. Make sure your bio is consistent. Make sure it has the right words, right links, is up to date with the website. And a really good way of growing your personal brand on social media is by, for instance, at events. So everyone who's watching this right now, afterwards, what you should all be doing is tweeting every single one of the panel, your favorite part of this, because then they get to know who you are, that you actually were interacting, and that you were part of this panel discussion. So what that does is that the speakers then notice who you are, and then when they start to see you on other events, they'll follow you, they get to know you, and maybe work will come out of that. So be engaging. So that's a really good tip that you can actually do, is engage with the people in talks and discussions as well.
Love it. Abby, anything to add?
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I suppose the main thing is definitely, you know, being human with it and being approachable as well. you know, the more people that feel comfortable coming to you and asking questions, I suppose, like I get it quite a lot on LinkedIn where people will come and ask me questions about social, and it's just like, I love receiving messages like that because I love being able to have conversation with people about social media. So the more approachable that you seem across your social channels as well, the easier it will be for people to really resonate with you and want to follow your journey, I suppose, as well, which is good.
Amazing. So just an addition to that, really, Paul's asked, he likes to keep his kind of personal life away from social. How do you get that balance where you want to be a thought leader, but then you have your personal life as well?
That's an interesting question. I mean, it's very easy to overshare on social media. It's quite easy. I mean, especially when you're live streaming, there's certain things I'll say in a live stream that I hadn't actually realized I said, and people will pick up a week later. I'm like, how did you know? Are you stalking, like looking over your shoulder? But you just like naturally tend to say, especially when you talk quite a lot for a living. But for me, I think it is important to have a line which you draw when it comes to social media. I don't share everything, but I do share the behind the scenes. Okay, so the behind the scenes, which for me is really important, like what I'm doing, where I'm going, train journeys. People love seeing how I got to the end goal. You know, it's like progression over perfection. Everyone should be focusing on progression and not perfection. And then everything else in terms of personal life, people won't care about, because if you're kind of sharing some element of you, you're satisfying people's needs, kind of, you know, on the stalking side of social media. And then you don't really need to share anything else. So I think just be aware of what you are saying on a live sense, because you will overshare. When it comes to a post, you have a lot more control over it.
Yeah, makes sense. And that kind of leads actually on to another question. Sorry, Kim and Abby, in terms of how do you deal with trolls?
Okay, I can answer that if you want as well.
Open to anyone.
Trolls is really interesting. I mean, I've definitely had my fair share of trolls through life. I mean, like I said, I've been live streaming for 5 years. And when I first started, every social media platform is a predominantly American platform because that's where it originated in. So you'll get people from different countries who will just not understand you. And so you'll get trolls on every single platform. The thing about trolls, though, is that there's different types of trolls. There's trolls that will just go out of the way just to break you down and try to get the attention off you because they're just bored. There's many keyboard warriors on social media. You shouldn't worry about that. The thing is, with your platform, you are the person in control. You should empower yourself because they have come to you to watch you or see your stuff. So it's very easy to forget that, right? Is if someone is watching you, it's because of something amazing that you're doing. So always remember to kind of empower you. I always recommend surrounding yourself with people who will uplift you as well and promote on a positive sense, which is really important. So for instance, if I'm in a live stream, I would always jump into random other people's live streams and big them up, right? Because there are people who are just little trolls and will try to put people off the games. I personally use reverse psychology when I'm live. I actually love calling out trolls by not speaking to them, but speaking to the rest of the people. So I would say, hi everyone, we've actually got trolls in the broadcast. I've got little red chairs and milk and cookies out in the corner for the trolls. Don't worry about it. They'll sit on the chairs and have milk and cookies while we'll have an adult conversation. They hate that. They absolutely hate being spoken to like a child. So what happens is that they stay in the broadcast because they don't want to be told what to do. Then it's an opportunity for you to turn them into followers. And so I have a lot of fun when it comes to trolls. But if you can't, block them. It's very straightforward. Block trolls. Don't bother with it. There's many ways that you can deal with it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think as well, from a business point of view, due to kind of like the number of followers that we've got across our social channels, it can be very difficult at times, I suppose, to keep up with some negative comments. Because I think the thing that you'll find across social full stop is that a lot of people are keyboard warriors. Like, even if they've got nothing to moan about, people will find something to moan about. It is extremely annoying, but it is something, obviously, that you have to face when using social media. I think the main thing for us, coming more from kind of like the publisher side, is if it is possible, try and diffuse whatever situation it is that has caused this person to make this statement, whatever that statement might be. Now, it is kind of subjective, I suppose, in the sense of what point you just turn around and be like, no, that's too much, get rid. But if there is that room, I suppose, for communication and replying to that person and trying to diffuse it, I definitely advise trying to do that as well. Just because, especially from a brand perspective as well, I suppose, like if people are seeing you interacting with other people and almost solving these problems, there'll be a lot more trust there as well from the consumer side.
Amazing. Yeah, we had a torrid day on Birmingham Updates yesterday with the peaceful protests, and it was just really quite miserable. But I say we banned a lot of people on Birmingham Updates yesterday, because you want the right community following you, and that's don't let kind of negativity or trolls get you down. I know it can be quite tough sometimes, but and also I know I shouldn't say this running social media channels, but take a break if you need to, just have a bit of a detox, get away, and try not to let it affect you. But I know it can be tough sometimes. Anything to add to that, Kim? I know we've covered it pretty well, but
yeah, no, it's probably not really my area, to be honest.
You're reason. Normally the troll, are you?
Probably, yeah. Sitting there bashing around my keyboard. No, I mean, I think that's why I said earlier, you know, Twitter for me, I find that very negative, so I don't tend to use it for that reason.
Yeah, no, it's really good. So next question is, I can't remember the stat off the top of my head, but there's an unbelievable rise in live streaming over definitely during the pandemic. Just to each of you, really, how have you used it for your own channels, and how would you recommend the attendees to use it for their businesses? Kim, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so I'm going to go straight in. I haven't done any live streaming. For me, the risk of making a mistake is probably too great at this stage. I'd rather have a more curated video that's branded and kind of, yeah, consistent with the key messaging. It's not my experience or level of experience at all. So I would always record something and then post it. But for us, video is probably not something that we share on a daily basis anyway. I probably don't have any experience in this area.
Cool. Maybe after this though, because I'm sure Abby and Amrit have got some unreal tips. So Abby, over to you.
Yeah, so the one that stands out for me more than anything is what I mentioned earlier, Talking Trade. I'm extremely proud of like the guys being able to pull that off and the response that's had. We've always done live, more so down the route of competition led, I suppose, in particular, with kind of like the little bit of news intertwined within that. However, moving away from that competition mechanism, being able to go purely into communication and talking to our audience about something that's a huge concern for them at the minute, and allowing them to voice their opinions, because I think the main thing for construction workers was they felt like their questions weren't being answered when it came to what they could and couldn't do. So being able to give them that platform and know the fact that it's being viewed by a lot of people, I think was quite powerful. So that's definitely the one that stands out for me. And we're planning a future one as well for our On a Budget community, that's going to be more of like a nice little kid friendly cook along and stuff like that. So yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity for live, and just kind of look at your audience, I suppose, and see how you can take your current content and move that into live format so it's interactive in that current moment.
Amazing. Amrit?
Yeah, completely agree with that. That's really good. What's really interesting about live streaming though is it's still new to a lot of people. Like a lot of people have no idea what live streaming is, how to deal with it. I kind of, like I mentioned, when I first started live streaming in 2015, it was through Twitter, and it was with Periscope, and there was hardly anyone on it in the UK. And because of that, I became one of the first of 10 people to become a Twitter Live ambassador. I was flown to VidCon in Anaheim, and I went to all the Samsung parties, the Vine parties, rest in peace, and all everywhere. And it was absolutely insane, because Twitter obviously wanted to, these 10 people wanted to see kind of what it was like to be an influencer and how live streaming can really change your life. And you know what? It did. It completely changed it revolutionized everything, because it's a one platform. The reason why it's so powerful is it's a one platform where you have your audience investing in you, and you've got them at your fingertips. So you really can capture and influence them in a way where static video and images and posts can't do that. right? And because people are investing their time in you and they're watching you, there's hardly any distractions. So you need to kind of think about how can you produce content which is best suited for that kind of format. So first of all, realize that it's still new, and experiment is perfectly fine. Yes, there's a big scary part, which is it's not pre-recorded. You can make mistakes. And what if you make mistakes, like people panic? I definitely panicked the first time I live streamed because I was just like, I wasn't used to being in front of the camera, by the way, it's always behind the camera. So I was just like, what's happening? But then I set myself a goal, which was if I make a mistake, point it out and then go with the flow. What has helped me personally is to be more fluid. And I'm kind of used to that. I'm kind of glad I started as a live streamer than a YouTuber, because I'm good at just making stuff up on the spot. Whereas if I was a YouTuber, I would be like, okay, quit, edit, retake. There's a big difference in terms of thinking. So in terms of live stream, my biggest tip is to always engage with your audience. Really important. It's not a YouTube video. Don't just speak to the camera and ignore every comment that is coming through. If you do, they'll get bored, they'll switch off, they'll jump into another live stream. You have to engage at the same time. And also, don't sit there at the start waiting for your viewers to turn up, okay? Because people will watch on the replay. And the last thing that you want is people watching you on the replay and you're like this. For 1 minute, you're just like doing something and expecting people to come in. So start off your live stream with a bang. Learn how to introduce yourself. Learn an elevated pitch, which is your name, what you do, what the live stream is about, how they can get in touch with you. Start off with an intro and then maybe kind of tone it down a little bit, because when you repurpose a live stream on other platforms, it can create more engagement and content and also business for you. So don't think of a live stream as a live video that's once it's ended is that's it's over, right? You can repurpose a video. So yeah, definitely be excited, smile when you're live streaming as well, because guaranteed if you smile, the person on the other side is also smiling as well. Don't be grumpy, because nobody wants to see a grumpy face as well. So yeah, just kind of learn how to do an intro is probably my biggest tip.
Amazing. I love that, and I think what you've both kind of said, and the takeaway really is live streams are great for engaging your audiences and kind of answering questions that they may have, or give them that insight or behind the scenes. So if you're thinking about doing a live stream, just ask yourself, what are the questions your customers are asking or your audience are asking, and devise a live stream around answering that specific topic. If you're educating, informing, or educating, you're generally doing a good job on social. So just focus on those three things. It's just gone 3:00, so conscious of time. Do you want to just do a quick 30-second top tip for social branding and comms? And then we'll wrap up. Abby, should we start with you? Put you on the spot.
Sure thing. So I think the main thing that I would say then is understand your audience. I preach about this so much, but the most important thing that you can do on social is understand the audience that you are posting content to, because that will then allow you to develop your strategy and test out different content styles, and speak to your audience as well if possible. Give them options in terms of like what content they want to see. Potentially, if you're on Instagram, run polls and build hype around any new content as well that you're distributing. A lot of hard work goes into content creation. So, you know, build up a bit of hype around that, and, you know, big it up a little bit and get people excited. So, yeah, always keep your audience at the center of everything that you're doing, and then everything else should come alongside that.
Amazing. Kim?
Everyone. So I think from a brand perspective, it's really to be very clear on what the vision is, what the goals are of the company, where do you want to go, who do you want to be working with. If you've got a target list of companies that you want to be working with, have that very clear so you don't lose track of kind of where you're going. And then focus on tone of voice. Make sure that the tone of voice is consistent, the imagery and the artwork is all matching. Don't use pixelated logos. Seems an obvious one, but obviously each platform's got a different file size and different types. So make sure that they do look good on every platform. Some have got squares, some have got circles. So yeah, make sure that the logo is kind of quite clean within those spaces. But yeah, for me, I think tone of voice is really important.
Amazing. Love it. Brilliant. Amrit?
I think you mentioned learning and experimenting. I think that's a really big part of this, is keep learning, keep experimenting with different platforms. Learn about different ways that you can enhance your content that you're producing as well, especially with like 360 live streaming, augmented reality, virtual reality. There's some amazing tech, and every platform in fact is now experimenting with these types of technologies, and especially with 5G coming as well, it'll be easier to live stream, it'll be easier to run augmented reality adverts and content as well. So think about really creative ways that you can expand. I mean, we're doing it all the time. We went from a text-based post to evolving. So don't stop at one thing and don't be afraid of it. Experiment, fail, have fun, but just learn about different ways that you can engage with your audience. Remember, it is social at the end of the day, right? Social is a two-way thing. It's an interactive thing. There's many things which are going interactive, whether it's TV broadcasting and social media. So if you can really understand the social element, you'll benefit from different areas and industries as well.
Amazing. And then just finally from me, so I think social has to be at the core of your kind of comms community. Personally, I find it very difficult to see how you can outsource your social media, because you have to be live, you have to live it. It has to be a reflection of your brand, a reflection of your company, that exclusive behind the scenes, and give people access that they can't get anywhere else. There's no reason to follow you if they can see that content anywhere else. So you have to give them a reason to follow. And for me, personally, I think you have to kind of run it in-house or get specialists in-house to help you do it, because only ever talk about content. Content is literally king. So if you haven't got anything good to say, don't bother doing it. And as all the panelists have said, test, measure, learn. Don't be afraid. If your audience don't like your content, at least you've learned. You can try a different way. So yeah, hopefully that was useful. A big round of applause to the panelists. They've been amazing. Please go check them out on social. And a big shout out, as always, to Abby and the team at Downtown in Business for putting on these amazing speaks. Well, I can say amazing, but we'll let the audience be the judge of that. So yes, thank you so much for attending. Hope you're all staying safe and well, and look forward to seeing you all very soon.